Welcome. We're going to call the tax committee to order. I know we're getting a late start because we were waiting for the room, and all members have multiple committees right now. So we are just going to do what we can, and people are going to be moving in and out of the room. So with that, Representative Paulson wanted to have us get started on House Bill 81, and so we can't move it yet, Representative Paulson, but Representative Paulson, to your bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we've had a lot of discussion about deduction bills now, and this members would allow a 60% exclusion for long-term capital gains, essentially the same gain that qualifies for the federal preferential rate of 15%. Minnesota includes the full amount right now of net capital gains income in taxable income and subjects it to the same tax for ordinary income, the 5.35% or 7.05 or 7.85%. Madam Chair, at least 18 other states right now have some type of preferential treatment for capital gains income. This bill is actually modeled after Wisconsin, and it essentially matches some of the exclusions that we had in Minnesota pre the 1986 federal and Minnesota law. Madam Chair, I think there are some pluses, and that is that capital gains do play a unique role. They do play a very unique role in fostering economic activity, especially by entrepreneurs in the high technology areas. And Minnesota is home to some of those high technology areas, and we would have some tremendous opportunity for continued job growth. Madam Chair, I think also that capital gains tax cuts have the ability to improve the economy. It creates incentives for personal savings and investment. And it's also a fact that it is used by folks that are basically retired and over age 65. So in a nutshell, that's the bill, Madam Chair. And, of course, it is scalable, as many of the other provisions that are before the committee, and would be happy to answer any questions. And, again, this is modeled after Wisconsin, our neighboring state.
Thank you, Representative Paulson. Are there questions for Representative Paulson? Are there testifiers from the public, either for or against, for Representative Paulson's bill? If not, Representative Paulson, I have to say, the price tag on this one is large, but it's a policy question, and it is scalable. The thing I think you have going for you here is, unlike many of the credit and subtractions bills, you actually are trying to help a quarter of a billion filers. So, all these things are a calculation between how many people are you serving. So that's on the revenue note, and it's interesting to note. I just wanted to ask you, Representative Paulson, you know that the federal tax code is going to change that 15% to 20 in a couple of years here. And as a legislator, this isn't directly related to your bill, but you've spent a lot of time in this area with the capital gains issues in the tax committee. I would ask you to be willing to think with me about what the tax committee might want to do proactively about that problem, because we will have a huge timing problem coming up here when those capital gains are realized. And have you thought about anything related to that and how we might position ourselves going forward?
Madam Chair, I have. That's a very good point. And actually, the reason I introduced the bill, I think this is very deserving of discussion from a long-term perspective, not only for what's happening at the federal level, but also just in terms of general state tax policy. And I want to at least set the table for, if and when we have future opportunities with future surpluses, hopefully we'll have some ability to make some changes here, as other states like Vermont and Wisconsin have done.
Yes, I agree with you, and I appreciate that that it's a very difficult thing to get some movement on, but it's still something the committee needs to talk about. Representative Coles, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair, I appreciate you hearing the bill. Representative Paulson, thanks for putting it in. I think you're absolutely right, Representative Paulson, that we need to at least set the table and start having this discussion. I think it's the right policy. I think it's a job creator, and I understand with a revenue note like this, we're going to have a lot of trouble, Madam Chair. But again, I'm happy to go with you to Chairman Solberg and fight for a bigger target for the tax committee. We'll see what we can do, and if we can help Representative Paulson out, I'm all for it.
Thank you. And Representative Paulson, unless there's something else on House File 81, and we will move it later when we can, we will move to House File 1378, and that's the Minnesota College Savings Plan. Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, this is a bill that would essentially allow an income tax deduction for contributions for those individuals that do contribute to Minnesota College Savings Plan. As most members may know, right now we have, under current law, a grant that is provided to those participants in the College Savings Program of incomes under $80,000, essentially. But there are many, many other states that already allow this tax incentive and adjustment, Madam Chair. And when you're able to move this bill as well, Madam Chair, there is an amendment. I want to make sure that it's able to be moved, an A1 amendment. And I, just so members know, and you know, Madam Chair, that is an amendment that would open it up to all college savings plans, not only the current plan that is available to Minnesotans under the state plan for the grant, matching grant. And so I do have one individual who would like to testify briefly, Madam Chair, if I could, Mr. Bill.
That would be great. Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair. And my name is Bill Strasinski, and I represent the Securities Industries and Financial Marketers Association. Thank Representative Paulson and thank the committee for expanding this to all 529 plans. There's lots of choices for people out there for plans that fit their best, their family needs, and that's we support the bill.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against this bill? If not, other questions from members to our testifier or to Representative Paulson? If not, you've been incredibly efficient, Representative Paulson. We appreciate that. We do have Representative Thiessen has a similar bill. He's over at the Capitol, I believe, in a joint hearing, and we'll get that one out as soon as he gets in the room. But that's I just want to point that out to members, and thank you, Representative Paulson.
Thank you.
Representative Cole.
For either Representative Paulson, yourself, or Mr. Michael, and I apologize if you mentioned this, Representative Paulson, would the deduction apply regardless of income, or is there an income cap in the bill here?
Representative Cole, I'll ask Ms. Manzi to answer that if she knows.
Madam Chair, Representative Foles, there is not an income limit on who can claim the deduction in the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Other questions? Not? We will move your bills when we can, Representative Paul.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And your amendment. We won't forget that either.
Okay.
I see that Representative Cornish is here. Were we trying to get you out of here, Representative Cornish? Representative Cornish asked to have his bills moved from Monday to Tuesday, and then Tuesday to, I don't know. He claims he lost his voice. I'm not sure. We'll see when he talks. Welcome, Representative Cornish. And Representative Cornish, we're going to go to 435. We'll move your bill when we can. Welcome.
Madam Chair, I have House File 435 and 433. House File 435, I'm trying to survive here. I had the perfect storm happen today. My testifiers couldn't show up, and I can hardly talk.
Okay, we believe you now.
This bill would...
excuse me, Representative Cornish. Representative Carlson would like to tell you something.
Oh. No, I just was saying, I understand. I heard earlier today he had to duck.
I had what?
He had to duck.
Oh, yeah. Somebody threw a testifier threw something at me.
Oh, no.
Seriously.
Yeah,
whipped the DVD at me and hit me in the shoulder. And,
oh, no.
Fuck, it wasn't higher.
Representative Mullery wants to read a note.
What's that?
May I read your note to me?
Yeah, go ahead.
After the incident, when he was assaulted, he wrote a note to me. I have a bonding bill up. Besides, it's too dangerous in here. Aren't you proud of me? I didn't even shoot back.
Sheriff, for the people who may not know what committee Representative Mullery chairs, that might be important for them to know.
Representative Mullery?
Public safety.
Public safety. You need to get some control in there.
This guy was protesting violence of all things.
Representative Cornish, if I may, since we've had an aside there, I'm going to go ahead and accept Representative Cole's motion to move House File 81, and I will lay that over for possible inclusion. I also want to accept Representative Cole's motion to he's moving House File 1378, and he would like to offer the A1 amendment for Representative Paulson. Discussion on the A1 amendment for Representative Paulson. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, and I will lay over House File 1378 for Representative Paulson. Thank you, Representative Cole. And now, Representative who would like to move Representative Cornish's bill? Representative Cole moves House File 435. Thank you, Representative Cornish.
I'll just read a short description, Madam Chair and members. This bill will allow a taxpayer who conducts a trade or business to claim a credit against the individual income tax or corporate franchise tax for expenses related to converting one or more vehicles used in the business to an alternative fuel vehicle. The credit is equal to 50% of the expenses incurred and is limited to $500 for vehicle weight less than 10,000 pounds and $1,000 for vehicles weighing more than 10,000 pounds. If the amount of the credit exceeds the liability for tax, the excess credit may be carried over to the next taxable year. This is from the revenue statement, which shows, I guess, unknown on the revenue statement. And Senator Rosen has got the bill in the Senate, and I guess she's getting hearings for it over there. So it is a live bill.
Are there questions for Representative Cornish? Are there testifiers from the public who would like to speak in support of or in opposition to this bill? If not, any other comments, Representative Cornish? I know you're throat.
No, Madam Chair. I'll save.
Okay. And members, I will then lay over House File 435 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Cornish, Representative Cold now moves for you House File 433.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The explanation of this bill, House File 433, for the purpose of the individual income tax, this bill would allow a subtraction from federal taxable income for the purchase of an alternative vehicle. The subtraction is equal to $2,000 per vehicle. Is this the same description I was had or not? No, I think this is the right one. An alternative vehicle that's described as a dedicated, flexible, or dual-fuel vehicle operated primarily in alternative fuels. Alternative fuels include natural gas, liquefied petroleum gas, hydrogen, coal-derived liquid fuels, electricity, methanol, denatured ethanol, and other alcohols. Mixtures containing 85% or more by volume, or methanol, denatured ethanol, or other alcohols with gasoline or other fuels. The fuels other than alcohol are derived from biological materials. And then this analysis assumed that all vehicles equipped to operate on the 85 vehicle will be eligible for the subtraction. The definition of alternative fuel vehicle specifies a vehicle must be operated primarily on alternative fuel. The subtraction would be claimed at the time of purchase, and it may not be known at that time whether the owner will use 85 fuel most or all of the time. And, Madam Chair, I had a amendment on, maybe analysts could help me here. Where was it, the last bill that I should have made it on?
We're going to, I'm going to accept Representative Cole's motion to, I'm going to lay this over temporarily. I'm going to accept Representative Cole's motion to reconsider House File 435. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're back on House File 435. And now Representative Cole's move, the A1 amendment. I don't have it in front of me.
Madam Chair, it hasn't been drafted. It's a very small oral amendment.
Okay.
I can tell it to you.
That would be great.
Could you tell us what my amendment is?
Yes.
Your amendment is on page 1, line 13, delete subdivision 1 and insert subdivision 1B. Subdivision 1 in that chapter is an applicability statement, and subdivision 1B is the definition of alternative fuel vehicle.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Is that correct, Representative Cornish?
That's correct.
And is that your motion then, Representative Coles?
That is my motion. Thank you.
Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment carries. I will now lay over House File 435. Thank you, Representative Coles, for dealing with that for us. And Representative Coles now moves House File 433. So I think, Representative Cornish, if you have something else you wanted to add on that?
No,
on 433. Is there someone from the public who would like to testify either for or against House File 33? Questions from the committee?
Very briefly. Madam Chair, I don't know if you recall or staff. I know that I believe Representative Hornstein and Representative Broad had some legislation related to electric vehicles last year. I don't know if they have it again this year.
And Representative Coles, it's been a busy week, and I must thank the staff who have done an incredible job with all these bills. I think we actually heard.
I was probably in another committee
Monday,
up at that
and we're all moving in and out of the room, and yes, this is very similar to Representative Hornstein's bill.
Is it a subtraction, a credit, deduction?
Credit. Yes, it was a credit. And so, refundable credit. So Representative Cornish, the Tax Committee, likes yours a little better, but costs a little less. Representative Rosarita.
Well, Madam Chair, and not particularly specific to Representative Cornish, because she's certainly doing nothing any different than hundreds of other bills. But, you know, it's kind of easy to spend money, and basically that's what these do when they subtract money. I look at it that way. Do we have a running total of how much the so far, how much we've cost the state, and do we have a running total of bills that have actually raised money for the state that pay for these expenses?
Representative Rucavino, back on Monday, we have the scorecard of all the bills, and there are fiscal notes on many of them. Some are unknown.
I was just wondering if you're kind of keeping a running total.
I'm trying to, and I think we can get that when we're all done this week, what kind of all these bills count up to.
You know, today I had that this is a little bill that I thought wouldn't cause any trouble, and it caused a lot of trouble. And, you know, I heard Representative Seifert talk about how, you know, we're taxing everybody and spending money. And I'm just wondering, I've been on the committee I chair. There's some Republican bills that spend a lot of money, and I've kind of started to see what they cost. And I'm just wondering if we know how much everybody else has been spending and then complaining about taxes and raising money.
I admit I have not been keeping track.
Well,
but I bet you're going to. I think that finally happened.
This summer, and I thought you put a little bit of the range in you, and you got to keep a scorecard.
Representative Cornish, Representative Rucavina has the old filing cabinet scorecard right there. And we don't tangle with that filing cabinet. See, it comes out. Look at all those papers in there. He's like the walking dictionary there. You don't want him reading one right now.
I got Airhurst property tax.
He'll probably give me a break. I voted for his flag bill today. So.
Are there other comments or questions from members? If not, Representative Cole renews his motion, and I will lay over this House Bill 433 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you, Representative Cornish. And we have Representative Mulery who has to leave at 6:30 for another committee, then we want to get to Representative Dean who's been waiting patiently. Representative Mulery moves House File 69. Welcome, Representative Mulery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill I've had in for a few years, and it's just to try and make it fair for everyone, the fact that many people right now can have a deduction in essence for the cost of their health insurance premiums. And what this would do would level off the playing field. If you're in with an employer that has a special plan, or if you're in a union plan, you have your health insurance paid for with after-tax dollars in essence. And otherwise, you have to, you don't get a deduction from your income for your premiums. And this would just put you on equal grounds with those who have either union or employer plans. And it's basically a pretty simple bill just to accomplish that. I doubt that you want to go into all the details of this.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Is there someone from the public who would like to testify either in favor of this bill or in opposition to? If not, committee members, are there questions for Representative Mullery? And, you know, as you all know, we can ask him as we move forward with the omnibus tax bill, as I know he has to leave. But if there's an urgent question, we'll take it. Otherwise, Representative Mullery renews his motion, and I will lay over House File 69 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Mullery. Representative Dean, who would like to move Representative Dean's bill? Representative Lanning moves House File 930. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dean. Representative Dean, are you getting that we're really efficient here?
Yes, Madam Chair, members.
No, we're usually not. But I think we've had a number of night meetings and lots of people have lots of committees. So
I really appreciate the committee's time, and this bill is very, very, very similar to a lot of the other deduction bills that you've seen before. This one has to deal with what I am familiar with, which is health insurance and long-term care insurance. And what it tries to do is make health insurance more affordable for folks. We are lucky in that we have the lowest number of uninsured folks in the country in health insurance, and we want to improve upon that. We also have only 7% of Minnesotans have long-term care insurance, and that is a problem that we're going to face as the baby boom generation moves on. We want to make sure that more folks get that. What this does is it deducts from the federal taxable income the amount you spend on health insurance, deducts that, and it's as a standard deduction, from the way I understand it. And it also does health insurance and long-term care insurance. And for the folks who are not included on this or folks who can already deduct it, that would be self-employed people or corporations. This is aimed at individuals. And that, in a nutshell, is the bill. There's a revenue note included with the packet. And Ms. Mandy has done a very nice job of putting this together from the information that I have. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Other questions for Representative Dean? Representative Cole.
Not for Representative Dean, but maybe for Ms. Manzi. I'm looking at the difference between Representative Dean's bill and Representative Mullery's bill. I see that Representative Mullery's bill has something to do with the alternative minimum tax. Can you help me understand the difference between the two and what Representative Mullery's bill is doing that Representative Dean's bill is not?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Cole's... The alternative minimum tax, rather than allowing all of the regular subtractions in Minnesota's income tax, replaces those with a flat exemption amount unless there's a specific subtraction specified for an item in the section of statute dealing with the alternative minimum tax. In last year's omnibus tax bill, the exemption amount for the alternative minimum tax was increased substantially, from $40,000 for married couples filing joint returns to $60,000. And that greatly reduced the number of taxpayers in Minnesota subject to the alternative minimum tax to something around, I think it's around 8,000 taxpayers projected for tax year 2007. Typically, however, when there's a fairly significantly sized subtraction proposal, we may recommend to authors that they include an alternative minimum tax subtraction for it also, simply to avoid shifting the affected taxpayer from the regular tax onto the alternative minimum tax. And that's why Representative Mullery's bill includes that section. If you look at the revenue estimates for the two bills, you'll see that they show the same cost. So the Department of Revenue has assumed in its projection that none of those 8,000 people still on the alternative minimum tax would be the people affected by this subtraction. It's sort of a belt and suspenders kind of thing to put it in there when a subtraction is over, you know, $5,000 or so. And a health insurance subtraction could be fairly large for an individual, so that's why it's included in the one. And if Representative Dean's bill were to move forward, he would probably want to consider adding that to his.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Manzi. And Representative Dean, you are, I agree, this long-term care purchasing is a problem. Let's try to get folks to want to take the time or use their money by long-term care. And I remember when my parents purchased it, they sort of announced to all of us, don't expect us to be saving anything for you. Our gift is we're buying long-term care. And I think that is a problem, and it's hard to get people to want to step up and purchase the product. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward. And is there anyone from the public who would like to testify either for or against? Any other questions from committee members? If not, I will lay over House File 1245. Thank you, Representative Dean.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, 930. House File 930. I apologize.
Appreciate
you. House File 930. Thank you. And I'm thinking of Representative Eakin there. So now we're going to go to Representative Eakin and reading House File 1245. Representative Coonan moves House File 1245. Welcome to the committee, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. What this bill does, the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board pays ambulance service volunteers longevity awards for those who qualify. Those who qualify would be those who have served for at least 5 years and who are 50 years of age or older and have retired from the ambulance service. The longevity awards, on average, it was about $4,000 for each individual who received this award. And currently, the longevity awards are considered income for the purposes of state income taxes. This bill would exempt the longevity awards from those taxes. So that, in a nutshell, is what this does. It would, I think, help in encouraging people to stay in the ambulance service and join the ambulance service. It's one of the areas where I think there's been a real problem in doing that. So this is just one added incentive, not a very big one, but an incentive nonetheless. So, and with that, we have O.J. Doyle, Mr. O.J. Doyle here, who's going to testify to the bill.
Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. We represent full-time paid as well as volunteer ambulance services throughout the state of Minnesota. Representative Eakin did a very good job of hitting on the high points. Essentially, Minnesota is in a crisis as far as volunteers are concerned, and it's hard to believe, but 62% of all ambulance personnel in Minnesota are volunteers. You get outside the metro area, and we're heavily dependent on people through their goodwill to volunteer in the communities. Longevity award is a modest payment. The average payment, as Representative Eakin said, was a little over $4,000 last year. And you'll note the fiscal note for the exemption from taxes is $27,000. Pretty modest proposal, but with volunteers, legislation goes a long way with a small amount of money.
I
apologize.
No,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucamina.
Mr. Chair, just curious, Mr. Doyle, would you refresh my memory? Do the ambulance drivers get that similar pension that the volunteer firefighters get, or don't they get that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lucamina, no, ambulance personnel do not get the firefighter pension-like plan, which is with all the insurance. That's why this was set up. It's more modest than that, but at least it's something is an incentive to recruit and retain people.
How many, Mr. Chair, of these volunteer ambulance drivers are not volunteer firefighters? Because a lot of them in my area, most of them are the same person.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ruckovina, that's really difficult to determine. We've tried to do that, but what happens is some municipalities have volunteer fire departments and volunteer ambulance, but they're not staffed necessarily by the same people. There's several cases, I think, where they're not-for-profit organizations under the auspices of the city, whereas the fire department is part of the city, and we've had a tough time getting very accurate numbers and pegging that down.
Well, so Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to get at is just quickly the, you know, those awards, like at least for the cities I represent, like 25 grand or so after so many thousands of dollars times how many years, and they're averaging around, I think, $20,000-$25,000, a lot of them. And so these people only get like $4,100 for all those years of service and volunteering if they're not a firefighter, because I know they got to do a lot of training they're required to do and everything else. So it doesn't seem like they're asking too much for them at all. But where does the $387,000 come from? Is that a tax, an insurance premium tax or something?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when this plan was created a number of years ago, I don't want to misspeak, but the state, as I understand it, pays a certain portion of the retirement for local law enforcement, peace officers, and this fund that has been established, there's been an overage every year, and $900,000 is taken from that overage, deposited in a suspense account, which holds the dollars, invests them with other state pension dollars. Then they take the total number of people who are enrolled in the program, divide it into the money in the pot, and that equals how much each person is going to get based on that. And I hope I've explained that right.
Oh, I'm not confused anymore at all. Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Doyle? Anything further, Representative Eakin? Okay, we'll lay aside for possible inclusion, then House File 1245.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, I would move that 1541 be recommend to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. Representative Rukavina moves House File 1541. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think you heard a bill that was almost very close to this, but Representative Paulson just previously relates to the, I think that is this one, right? We're doing 1541?
Right.
Okay, hold on. I have two in front of you. I'm sorry. Yes. It relates to the 529 programs, and this one is specifically related to Minnesota's program. I think there's an amendment that was drafted and they put on Representative Paulson's bill that would have expanded this to cover any 529 plan from any state. You know, you can put that on this one or not, but I think since it's on Representative Paulson's bill, you probably get the gist of that amendment. Basically, the idea here is that we give some incentives to folks that are saving for their college tuitions by investing in these qualified plans. That would be the bill.
Okay, any questions, members? Anybody who cares to testify for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Securities Industry and Financial Marketers Association. I would encourage the committee to take a look and adopt that amendment that went with this, the earlier bill, because the bill as it currently exists today only allows one company, the Minnesota plan, to take advantage of that. If I expand it to all 529 plans, you can, which 25 other states have done, you can then have some flexibility in determining which plan works best for your family, so that it allows other companies to compete as well for the business. So that's, I would encourage that. Anyhow, Mr. Chairman, we support the bill. That amendment.
Any questions, members?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Rippey.
Does Representative Thiessen want the amendment on this bill, or
No? I'd be happy to put the amendment on the bill. If I just don't want to waste your time. So, but if you want to put it on, please.
Could counsel maybe read the amendment? I don't, or Beth, or Ms. Nancy, or Mr. Michael, one of the two. If they read the amendment, I'll move it.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, I think the amendment, we haven't drafted it to Representative Thiessen's bill, but it would read on page 4, line 11, delete under chapter 136G and insert qualifying under section 529 of the Internal Revenue Code.
Representative
Rukavina moves the amendment. All members
and
get
member, and then could I just ask Mr. Straczynski a question? So why is this written? Is this written to the Minnesota? So it's written to that plan that the Higher Education Board administers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, 136G is the Higher Education Coordinating Board's Minnesota College Savings Plan, where there's matching grants and whatever that goes with that. There's only one fiduciary. One company is the fiduciary for the whole plan, so you'd have to...
So it's not the state that administers it, they contract it with somebody else. Okay.
Okay, anything, Representative Erard?
Mr. Chairman, a question maybe for counsel. You would then have a matching grant and a deduction, am I reading that right? You have both aspects?
Mr. Mike.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that is correct. That you would, an individual could make contribution and receive a matching grant and take a tax deduction for the contribution if their income is low enough. There's an income limit on the matching contribution grant program.
And Mr. Chair, I think also, and you can, that with the amendment, we did a matching grant for the non-Minnesota programs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is the matching grant an offset for the deduction, or how do we do that,
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the way the bills, both Representative Paulson's and Representative Thiessen's bills are written, there's no interaction between the two. For income-qualified people who contribute to the Minnesota plan, they could get both a matching contribution and tax deduction.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further to the amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Anything further on the bill?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. House file 1541 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Thiessen, Representative Rukavina moves House file 1963.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House file 1963 creates a tax deduction for scholarship grant organizations for low-income students to attend to organizations that contribute to scholarship granting organizations, and these scholarships are granted to people, low-income kids, to go to school, basically. And we have some testifiers to talk about the bill if they come down.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Field. I work with the private schools in Minnesota. All 532 of them, 80,000 kids. There's a picture going around of a young student at a school, and really this is why we're here today. And we're, by the way, going to be as short as we can. But if you look at her sparkling eyes, she is a, her mother was an immigrant from Guyana. She has seven children. Two of them are now studying, one's studying to be a doctor, one's studying to be a lawyer. She has no husband. She has two children in LaSalle High School, two children in a Southside private school, and one child that's not school age yet. All of them have received scholarships from various organizations, Kids First, most of you might know that, and the organization that I work with, the Minnesota Independent School Forum, which basically we raise scholarships for kids to go to schools. I would like to just paint a quick picture of private schools in the state for you, because find out more and more that the real picture isn't out there. Please don't think of private schools as a Blake and Breck. That's less than 2% of the private schools in the state. The average private school is 163 kids. They're struggling to stay open, especially the rural schools where there just isn't the population. There's a lot of rural towns that have a private school and no public school. These kids need an alternative school to go to. As I said, they are struggling. So we're here about those children, and I'm going to turn over. We have a parent, Shonda Smith, that would like to speak to this bill.
So many choices.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thanks. I'm Shonda Smith, CHANDA Smith, and I'm here representing my three children this evening. One who's 14 in a private school, one who's 11 in the West Metro educational program at Thayer in Robbinsdale, and one who is a Minneapolis public school student. I'm also in a relationship, and we've got five additional kids, three Minneapolis public school graduates, and one in a charter and one not yet school age. So I think I'm coming pretty qualified to talk about this particular issue. And what I am speaking to is, in the range, I've noticed a big difference between what is now being passed on to parents, particularly in the public school in terms of expense and educational opportunities. Field trips are no longer $5 and $10, they're $50 and $70, and they're taking trips that could certainly benefit the student. And this is the best analogy I can think of, and if you can just imagine going to a black tie event in a pair of jeans, and I think that some of our students are feeling that way. They're going to school, and they want to come and be prepared, but their confidence is not quite there because they're not able to come in at the same level. And this is what we're talking about, is allowing opportunity for students in the public and the private school to come in and have opportunity to have the same education within that system that their parents has chosen.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from committee members for either of the testifiers? Sure. Representative Rukavina.
Not for the testifiers, but for Representative Tiefen. Unless I can't find it here, Adam. Is there a fiscal note with this? I'm just curious.
Oh, there is. Not right now. I don't know if you have it, but there would be a fiscal note, yes.
Do you have any idea what it is?
Around 20 million.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Lannan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was one of my questions, too. What was the projected cost here? Representative Thiessen, could you, for our sake, make the case here as why this should be a credit versus a deduction? Obviously, people now who make contributions to legitimate 501c3 organizations can take it as a charitable deduction. What do you think are the main arguments for making this a credit now instead?
Well,
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say two things, and maybe some of the other testifiers could expand on this. But one, it's more attractive to have a credit. And two, credits are not necessarily the most effective, you know, for at the lower income levels because you don't have so much to deduct. So those would be my two arguments on that. But the witnesses may have more to say to that question as well.
Follow up, Representative Lannan?
No, unless they have to comment.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, honorable members, my name is Lee McGrath. I'm the executive director of the Institute for Justice, Minnesota chapter. I thank the committee for this opportunity to testify in favor of House File 1963, and I also thank Representative Thiessen for authoring it. I'm a member of a diverse coalition of parents, educators, and businesses who are committed to two goals that this bill represents. The first, we want to cool the overheated rhetoric about education reform in order to reach a consensus on the issues of fairness and equity. The second, we want to build on Minnesota's progressive traditions of supporting parents and teachers in their hard work to provide educational solutions to children. The Coalition for Kids includes the Black Alliance for Educational Options, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Business Partnership, the Islamic School of School League of Minnesota, the Catholic Conference, Torah Academy, the Southern Minnesota Lutheran, Missouri Synod Schools, the Christian Schools, my law firm, and parents who have children enrolled in both public and private schools. This coalition's strength comes from its commitment to Minnesota's progressive tradition that Governor Orville Freeman started in 1955 when he and your predecessors in the legislature enacted the first in the nation tax deduction of $200. We admire the courage that your predecessors had in the mid-1950s to enact this legislation. In 1971, Governor Wendell Anderson and your predecessors showed similar courage and adopted a tax credit for educational expenses. In 1976, Governor Rudy Perpich, with the help of the legislature, increased the amount of the 1955 tax deduction allowance. In 1981, Governor Al Quie retain the tax relief in a climate of fiscal scarcity. And in 1997, Governor Arne Carlson and some of you, perhaps, and your predecessors established a refundable tax credit and expanded the existing deduction for expenses incurred by parents of both public and private schools. Importantly, this bipartisan tradition is one that adds resources and increases the number of educational options available for children. To answer Representative Lanning's question, perhaps, it is the tax credit that stimulates more contributions to private scholarship-granting organizations that is at the heart of this bill. Most importantly, this tradition does not, and I repeat, does not diminish Minnesota's long-standing and constitutionally mandated commitment to a system of public schools.
Moreover, this tradition is motivated by a strong commitment to fairness and equity. It's not enough that some children in Minnesota get a world-class education. Minnesota's commitment to education extends beyond race, class, and neighborhood to every child. Regrettably, little has been done recently to expand the 52-year-old run that started with Governor Orville Freeman, went through Wendell Anderson, Governor Perpich, and Governor Quay and Carlson. It's been 10 years since the legislature and Governor Carlson worked together to add to that progressive tradition. It is vital, I believe, for all involved in educational and tax policies to throw away the idea of a zero-sum game of public schools versus private schools. That is an idea that has no historical basis in Minnesota. Instead, we should come together and return to a less ideological model of finding ways to directly help parents and teachers and to stimulate the support of those parents and teachers, particularly to meet the well-documented challenges of academic underachievement. Under Minnesota's well-established bipartisan model, the coalition that you've heard of two of my colleagues speak earlier urges the legislature to consider equity and fairness and to adopt a vehicle to stimulate greater private support of education of all types, public schools, private schools, and parochial schools. And specifically, we ask this committee to pass legislation that would grant tax credits to donors to scholarship granting organizations. These SGOs can be established by public schools, by private schools, by individual schools, or by groups. I thank the committee for its time.
All right, thank you, Mr. McGrath. Any questions? Okay, anybody else who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Representative Thiessen.
Nothing further.
All right.
Thank you for your consideration.
We'll lay over for possible inclusion, House File 1963. And Representative Gunther. Representative Lanning moves House File 1537 for possible inclusion in the text on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1537 is a pretty simple bill. We learned today in Representative Rocavina's committee that we've busted the $1 billion mark in school loans in Minnesota. We have gone from paying 67% of the college, state college cost to less than 50. And in order to keep an educated workforce in Minnesota, not only from Minnesota colleges, but from colleges from California that come here, one of the tools we could use to do that is to allow them to pay for their school loan with before tax dollars. And that's just simply what we're trying to do here. So I don't have a fiscal note on it. I'm sure you have one. How expensive is it?
About $6 million a year.
$6 million a year? That's less than I thought it'd be.
That's not.
But this is a program where in the next 2 years, Minnesota is going to be desperate for crane workers, especially on the higher end as well as the low end. All strata of Minnesota workers we're going to be short of. We're going to be begging seniors to stay on board, and we're going to dream about stealing all the kids we can from Illinois to go to college in Minnesota. What we're trying to do now is we're trying to keep those, get those people to stay here by giving them basically 1 month's payment free a year in their school loans. Because I assume that once they go to college and have school loans, they're going to be in an 8% area for taxes. 8% is about 1/12. So what I'm proposing is to give them 1 month free, a breath of fresh air for a month, to get under that burden. We found out today in Representative Rural Communities Committee that not only are the school loans huge and getting bigger, but they take up to 15 to 20 years to get them paid off. So by the time they get their loans paid off, it's time to help their kids get through college. So This is why I bought 1537, and I hope you would give it due consideration.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Gunther?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, and, you know, Representative Gunther has heard all the horror stories we've heard in the committee about kids graduating from technical colleges with $20,000 in debt today, which they used to be free when I was a kid, you know. And I'm glad you're trying to do something. Again, it takes money to run a public school system, public higher education system, and we've just been cutting. These bills cut all of our income, but I think what you're trying to do is commendable. Can you explain, so Representative Gunther, it seems like it's kind of means-tested. So what kind of income range are we talking about where this thing cuts off? Because maybe I'm reading that language wrong. It is.
Representative Gunther.
It was, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rokofin, it was never my intention to have it means-tested. I assume it's not. Uh-huh. It goes for all college loans. Is that correct?
No, it looks like it's coming means testing here because it refers to the Internal Revenue Code and that, but maybe I'm reading it wrong, so I was just wondering. Council or.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think there's some confusion because the federal deduction for student loan interest payments does have an income. It has two limitations. First, there's a limitation on the amount of interest that may be deducted, and that's $2,500 a year. And then there's a limitation on the income, on your income level to be able to claim that deduction, and that is $135,000 for married joint filers and $65,000 for all other filers. Representative Gunther's bill would allow at the state level the deduction of all student loan interest that is not allowed to be deducted at the federal level. So the interest that's already deducted at the federal level flows through to Minnesota's income tax, so his bill would add the interest that wasn't allowed at the federal level, and then it would also allow principal payments to be deducted at the state level. I think I'll stop.
So I'm surprised it's only $6 million a year too.
Anything further? Anyone else who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay. House file 1537 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And we
thank
need
you very much.
Thank you. We need to approve the minutes from Monday, March 12th, Tuesday, March 13th, and Wednesday, March 14th.
So moved.
Representative Rukavina moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. being a former college person myself, I'm struck by the several different proposals we have for providing some direct assistance or relief to individual students, families. And Representative Rukavina, I'm wondering if your committee is at all considering any policy question here as to if you had the $100 million or some particular sum, should some of that go directly to individual families to help pay for college, or should it go all instead to the system or to base funding? Is that a policy issue that your committee is addressing at all?
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, we are looking at trying to put more money into the state grant system that hopefully will help families, because it will go to the student, and I am certainly trying to keep the balance between the privates and the publics with our state grant program. So in that regard, you know, the governor does have some proposals in there that actually where you spent a little more money today when Ms. Hegard explained some of the changes in their supplemental.
bill, in the governor's supplemental bill. He's lowering the student family obligation, if you want to call it that. Then I think it's about 47 points, you know, for the,
right,
the student, lowering that. I can't remember if it's a percent or a percent and a half. You know, they've all got expenses. He's doing something with the proposal for another formula dealing with family income also. That's going to cost some money. That helps the middle class a little more. So, yeah, we're considering all of those proposals. We're not just going to throw all the money at the system itself, but we're going to try to throw some money towards the students and towards tuition and towards state grants that help those students in the private colleges too. I'm not, you know, I never went to a private college in higher education, but I did. I am the product of a parochial school, so whether that frightens people or not, I don't know, but you know, so I certainly have no axe to grind with the private parochial end of it.
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your response to that question, Representative Rocavina, and good luck as you work through that committee.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
if I had $1 million, you know, that song goes, I only need $1 billion.
Okay, anything further? I think we're done then, so meeting adjourned.